This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the People Speak Radio. Tonight, I'm Rob Kitzel, interviewing John C. Dvorak from Silicon Valley. We're very proud to have John here this evening. He's part of the No Agenda show, along with his cohort Adam Curry, and has also been involved in numerous other activities, especially with Tech TV, and is involved with Leo Laporte with Twit. And another favorite of mine is DH Unplugged. He does with Andrew Horowitz. Welcome to you, John. How are you this evening?
I'm great, and I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to give people a brief background on the No Agenda show and yourself and Adam. I think people may have seen Adam as that long-haired guy from MTV back in the 80s. And, you know, he's generally known by a lot of people now on the No Agenda show as Crackpot, and you as the more satirical side of the duo as Buzzkill to those of us who listen to the podcast. 6 years in. What are your thoughts, John? I personally am a fan because I like the business model that you have.
We have pretty much when we started the show's been going on. It's been slowly evolving to a kind of what it is today, which is a news analysis show where we take people always ask for me to explain it, and sometimes it's not that easy. You have to actually, in fact, even listening to the show once, I don't think you can necessarily figure out what we're up to. So we always try to get people to listen two or three times. But one of the things we do is we break down news stories, and ideally we find that they're actually public relations creations that have been fed to the media, the lazy media, as we like to think of them, who just regurgitate and parrot. And you know, somebody once said they just stenographers for bigger companies. And we try to get to the bottom of most of these things. And then we're very skeptical about most breaking news that's major, that gets a lot of attention and has a lot of discrepant facts. And we try to sift through what is being told and finding documents that contradict this, and we do actually read legislation too, which is unusual. Adam likes reading it, and we find that the government tells you one thing and they read the legislation that says something else completely different, and people kind of enjoy finding this out. And we do it in a kind of a humorous way with a lot of entertainment value, that to keep it light. We don't want to, you know, it could very easily become an extremely depressing show. And some people complain about it, that some of this news is depressing. In fact, Adam was complaining to me the other day because I'd come up with some stuff that he just made him uncomfortable. But so that's the No Agenda show. And the model that we employ, which is the value for value model, is and we believe that we can promote this idea, which is that the only reason we can even do a show like this is because the listeners or support the show. Then there's no chance of advertisers telling us what to do, or you know, having suggestions and all the rest of it. We have this model, and as long as people support it directly, that means we're doing the right thing. If we all of a sudden became, I guess, terrible at it, or if we, I don't know, we could probably offend the audience at some point and lose the whole group. We get no income, and the show would be over. And that's essentially the way it is. And it's not too complicated. It's just that we do it seriously. You know, I've had a lot of people bring it up that, you know, in fact, when we first came up with doing this model, the donation contribution model. A lot of people go, oh, this is, nobody can do this. This doesn't work. And my response was always pretty much the same. It does work. It's always worked. And it works if you take it seriously. Obviously, if you put a little tip jar in the corner and you're kind of shy about it, and you're maybe embarrassed that you're actually asking people for money. Yeah, that doesn't work. I agree. But if you're serious about this and this is the way it's going to be, this is where the show's going to go, and you make sure people understand that, they do everything they can to help.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think, you know, 6 years, 560 episodes in, that really speaks for itself. And explain the knighthoods to people. I think that was very ingenious of you guys, because it rewarded the people who were really standing behind you two guys and believed in the whole premise of No Agenda.
Yeah, the knighthood thing was something each of us have contributed to the model one way or another. I mean, Adam has made it clear that everybody who helps us on the show in any way is a producer, and so everybody's kind of referenced as a producer, and that's his thing. I've always had the idea that why should the British Crown be the only people that that give knighthoods out when I think anyone should be able to do it? And so I thought it would be a good idea to confer knighthoods on the people who contribute the most in the way of monetary donations. And we actually now, because it's been going on so long, we've had to up the ante, and we have now dukedoms, and you can get an earl, baronet, and the like.
Up yes,
to the mat. The top of it is Grand Duke, of course. That's the highest honor.
Yes, people like Von Pelsmarker and people like that, which is obviously a long-term sponsor of you guys. Well, yes. Of course, other people have done a few knighthoods as well. Of course, the Catholic Church, who managed to try and trump the royals with Jimmy Savile. So, obviously,
right.
Both of them managed.
Yeah, a classic blunder.
Exactly. Well, we're hoping that nothing like that, of course, happens with the No Agenda Knights. But, you know, me as a staunch anti-royalist, I'm personally enjoy you doing it, because I do get a bit of a kick out of it because of, in my former country, you know, the New Year's Honours List with obviously all these people with knighthoods and Commander of the British Empire and, you know, OBEs, MBEs, the rest of it. It was, a little bit, should we say, polarizing to some of us who didn't really appreciate that. But I do like that spin on it. Now, moving on with the question of the media, which obviously you guys are potentially media assassins, which I do think that part of your analysis is key to the success of the show, actually. And what's your thoughts with somebody like Mr. Bezos of Amazon owning a major publication with the Washington Post, yet having a contract with the CIA for $600 million in a cloud computing I'm not sure whether how much Mr. Bezos continues to think that he can be, shall we say, an honest judge of the media, having a $600 million contract. Your thoughts on that, John?
Well, Bezos is like big corporations, and let's face it, Amazon's not a small operation. Big corporations have long ago, and they've always done this traditionally, they buy into the media so they can use it to benefit the corporation. It's not unusual. I mean, General Electric owns, or did own NBC. They finally figured out they couldn't run a network, and they sold it off to Comcast. They still have a piece of it. Westinghouse had CBS, and now that's owned by, I guess, the Viacom and Disney, large operation in the entertainment mostly, but still they run a lot of parks, and you won't find any kinds of investigative reports on ABC since they own it. But this kind of thing is, and now many of the media outlets are, you know, owned by their conglomerates owned by one or two people who represent a corporation. This is no surprise, and I've always thought that Bezos You know, people say, why do you do that? You know, it's dead media. Well, not in Washington, D.C., it's not. The newspaper is very powerful there. And Bezos now can, for the amount of money he spent on the Washington Post, he will probably save money on lobbying. Because all he has to do if he wants to get a point across now, he doesn't have to have the spend a lot of money on the K Street guys. He can just write an op-ed or an editorial in the Washington Post explaining what the situation is and have the whole public be on his side. I don't see it, the product being any less good. It'll probably be actually more interesting because it'll be available on the Kindle and it'll probably compete a little more with the New York Times, and there's a lot of benefits to it. And the conflict of interest with the CIA, that's really nothing new in the media, to say the least. I mean, it's always been suspected that the CIA pulls the strings at the New York Times.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. And I think it's interesting to think about, you know, op-eds that could go out. And as you say, it'd be very relevant up there on Capitol Hill. And maybe he can save himself a few dollars on K Street lobbyists. Certainly couldn't help hurt him, I wouldn't think. Do you think, going over a step further with this incident where Pierre Omnidar is obviously said to be investing $250 million of his considerable fortune that he's made with eBay, amongst other things, where he's going to basically promote an entity which nobody's really sure about what he is exactly doing at the moment. I don't think him stating that it's going to be somewhat like the pilot project he's done in Hawaii with the likes of Glenn Greenwald and probably somebody like Scahill and people like that. Do you see this as something that will challenge mainstream media, or do you think it's too early to say?
Well, it is too early to say, but I have an opinion. I don't think this thing has a prayer. It's just not structured correctly. I mean, media has certain kinds of requirements. These guys, especially Greenwald, needs an editor. He just can't go off and become one. It's just not the style that he's used to, and he's never been kind of like a blogger like Andrew Sullivan, who pretty much Sullivan's model for doing making money as an independent is a little different than what we're seeing with this. This looks like it's going to be a lot of money thrown at these guys. And so the only thing I can think of offhand that it sounds like it's going to become like is Portfolio, which was a Condé Nast effort that had too much money to begin with, and it was being tossed around, and it creates a certain kind of laziness that doesn't really benefit anybody. And I just don't see Scahill and Greenwald actually working together, to be honest about it. They're both extremely radical, and they have huge egos, and they're both going to want to steer the ship, as far as I can tell. I could be wrong. They might be good drinking buddies, but I get the sense that these guys are they got big egos, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can work with anybody.
Yeah, what's your thoughts with what Greenwald was doing with Snowden there? Because, you know, a lot of people are interested in that, and I've had some people say to me in various chat forums and things that they didn't like that you guys had basically put down Greenwald to some extent. And I said, well, I think it's valid criticism, you know.
Well, this is not true. I mean, we try to be as objective as we can, and we're not cheerleaders, and we're especially not cheerleaders for Glenn Greenwald. I've always been a big fan of Glenn Greenwald's, and I've made that clear on the show. I follow him on Twitter. I like I like the way he writes. I like everything he does, and I like his point of view, even though it's, you know, it's way over to the progressive left. But he's got and I like the fact that he's been targeted by, you know, intelligence communities to, you know, to shut him up somehow. So all that's great. And so we really don't, but what we're talking about, generally speaking, I mean, this is like he didn't really want the documents to begin with. Just Laura Poitras finally got him to start looking at this stuff. And then he saw that he had a gold mine, which he milked very well. By doling out stuff, and now there's a controversy because the New York Times came with a very long article. I think it's 6, 7, 8, 9 pages of discussions of, because they've got the documents now, of about the documents kind of blowing of a hole in the pacing, because Greenwald has been making book on dropping a bomb every Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday. They're, boom, here's another one. Here's another document. Here's another one PowerPoint. And what we're complaining about is the besides the kind of manipulative release of this material, which we both object to, and Adam is more critical of Greenwald than I am, is the, here's slide, we brought this up on the last No Agenda show. Here is slide 76 from some deck, and that's the one with the little smiley face on it or whatever it was. And where's the rest of these slides? I mean, they're just like that. We're being pretty much used or manipulated with the very calculated release of material that has all been pre-approved by the intelligence community. There's nothing that we're ever going to hear that's really damaging. It's going to sound damaging. It's going to seem damaging. We're going to have a lot of congressional guys yelling and screaming about how Snowden's a traitor and all the rest of it. But I don't see it. It just looks like, it's all just confirmation of stuff that everyone's already either known or suspected. It's not a big deal.
No, I tend to agree with that. I think it was interesting. I was listening to NPR here in Los Angeles the other day on my way into the office. And interestingly enough, they were talking about that, and I'm not sure as you'd heard this, but they were mentioning that quite a lot of this information actually was to do with GCHQ in the UK, obviously working heavily interacted with the NSA's protocols. And a lot of this that obviously Greenwald had got, I don't know whether he was more interested in this because of his Guardian angle, was actually involving the British. Maybe that was why Cameron and people were trying to stifle things more, whereas early on in this, the British weren't mentioned as much. And I think they're in a bit of a tizzy about this. And I also think, do you think the Germans and the French and the Spanish are playing this up, or do you think they are genuinely as upset as they appear to be in the media? I do personally believe the Brazilians probably are very upset. But I think your thoughts?
I agree. I think the Brazilians are upset because they're not part of this game. By the way, did you find it, or do you find it weird that GCHQ's offices look like the proposed Apple, the new Apple campus? I find that weird. It looks like a big tire in the middle of nowhere.
Maybe they can just transpose each other, so that, you can just swap employees and they feel very much at home.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So, it's hard to say how much of this is posing by Merkel and the rest of them. They can't not say something because it makes us look like idiots. And so they have to, and a lot of American diplomats feel this is just theater. Oh, they've been spying on me. And maybe it is a little annoying to have your cell phone hacked. Which essentially was going on with Merkel, but it's really hard to tell what level of sincerity we're dealing with these people.
Do you think it could be a bit of bad blood because potentially the Americans are just better at it than others? I mean, I probably am not a believer that anybody short of the Mossad probably has the capabilities to do the same to the American system as the American system is doing unto others, so to speak. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't believe that. I think the people coming out of Cambridge that work at GCHQ are probably every bit as talented, and they probably have the same network map that they can tap into here and there. If they're doing a better job than we're doing, it seems as if we're not even really doing much of a job except just grabbing everything and storing it. That's why we need all these data centers. And I don't know that there's good real-time analysis or anything else. We've actually discussed the possibility that the NSA is just not really doing much more than just grabbing everything it can get its hands on in hopes that someday it can analyze it in the future. I'm not even sure that and they're losing stuff. There's machines going down all the time in the Utah operation, and they're supposedly blowing up left and right. And I'm not sure that what you assert is true.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think also, you know, people are perplexed about, you know, their text messages on their cell phones being archived and this, that, and everything else. As you say, the sheer amount of manpower you would need to decipher this information, it would probably be absolutely mind-boggling. And obviously, they do try and pick up on keywords of this and that. And, you know, moving on to, into the last week's incidents that we had, and I personally do like your six-week thesis that Adam and yourself have kind of come up with. Does this blow the six-week thesis, this pesky guy last night in New Jersey, or is he just a bit of a rogue? What's your thoughts on that?
There are people that do stuff like this that is not part of the cycle. I mean, unless the FBI showed up immediately thereafter, and I don't believe they did. I just think that's just a random event. So it's not part of the six-week cycle. The six-week cycle is reset, so we're waiting for another 6 weeks. This is discussed in the Tomorrow's No Agenda newsletter that a lot of people subscribe to. So let's back to this this other kind of analysis. I don't think that they have to analyze all these text messages, let's say, but they have to structure their file system in such a way that if I type in your name on the main computers at the offices of the NSA, I can get most of your texts back and forth from various people in a file just about you. And then I can, you know, because you're a person of interest, let's say. And now I can analyze those texts and see if there's anything in there that's worth my interest that it would get, that, or I could take further action. I think that's really what we're talking about here, it's like going back in time, which has been discussed a number of times. I don't think there's any real time, you know, spying except on very few people. I mean, I'm sure there's a few people that are just somebody's listening in all the time, but for the most part, that's got to be a small minority. I mean, it's got to be the 0.0 something percentages of all the crap they're grabbing.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
So it doesn't really, you know, it's nothing people should be wringing their hands over, I don't think. I mean, it just, unless you, I think the big fear, when we started doing the No Agenda show, we had a little segment. This lasted for about, I think, 2 years. Every time Adam would come into the country, he would get stopped essentially by TSA and taken into a dark room and questioned over and over. And every time he came into the country, this would happen because there was apparently, he finally found this out by, he kept asking questions and somebody told him. They say, yeah, we know you're not the guy we're looking for. They're looking for a guy named Adam Curry, who apparently was on some watch list. And this Adam Curry lived in North Dakota or South Dakota, someplace in the middle of the country. And this went on for a long time, and it was actually becoming quite humorous. It finally ended out of the blue, just stopped, and now he goes freely back and forth. But there's always a concern. I think there should be a concern with the public. And if you have a certain kind of name, I think there's some name out there like Charles Johnson or something that's commonly brought up in the conversation, because if you have this certain name, it's a very generalized name like that, you just get stopped all the time, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. It's just something you have to put up with for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's got to be very perplexing, hasn't it? You'd almost want to change your name by Deepol or something like you can in the UK, although that's probably not as easy as it was at one time. But yeah, I think that moving with the TSA as a subject matter, what's your thoughts where, I don't know if you've seen this in the media, but somebody brought it to my attention earlier today, where they may be more interested in having more of a background on people before they fly, you know, like their occupation, you know, and various other things. And that isn't in the context of you going through one of the fast track areas. From the context I heard it in, it was, you know, they wanted more information about travelers. Do you think that that's a possibility? Or I know you've talked about it on the No Agenda show where I think you think it can be very possible, and it already is in sporting events. If you go to an NFL game now, It's really like going to an airport, where I went to Atlanta Falcons against Denver last year. And, you know, they're looking in my wife's handbag, they're scanning us, you know, you hold your arms out, slave, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, where does it end? Is it going to be in shopping malls? Is it going to be on the famous trains like you guys have discussed in the past? I mean, we're really into a Big Brother society, are we not?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we can do about it. It's already too late. It's gotten to there's kind of a catch-22 involved here. The logical thing that you can deal that you can use to extend this type of thinking, which is, you know, it's a better to be safe than sorry rationale. And what you do, and if you cut back, God knows what could happen. It's not as if planes are dropping from the sky left and right. It's not as if somebody has even bombed a NFL football game or a World Series game. I had to deal with this. I went to a World Series game. I had to deal with this scanner. And it's not as if any of this stuff is happening, but golly gee whiz, it could happen. And it could happen, and we have to protect ourselves. And this is, again, this is, I actually discussed this in the current newsletter. This is just another way to get more money for the government, for both the TSA and the Defense Department and everybody in between. They've got huge budgets, bigger than ever in history, and they want more money because they're just having a great time spending it. And so they come up with this stuff, and it's essentially just a gouge of the American taxpayer, and this is an international occurrence. It's not just the United States where this kind of thing is happening. Bigger gougers over in Australia, it seems to me, and of course the UK, God knows what's going on over there, but they're all in on this idea of scaring the crap out of everybody so we can get more money to spend. And that's what it's, to me, that's all really it's about, is just getting free money.
Yeah, I've been a very big proponent of that theory for a long time. I mean, when we go from Bill Clinton into George W. Bush, where you had a military budget of $265 billion to when Bush left office, it reached into, you know, $700 billion. But then with ancillary budgets and, you know, people like what used to be called Blackwater and then merged into XE and all the rest of them, and then you form the Department of Homeland Security, and then you form the TSA amongst that, and you end up with a security military industrial complex probably costing around, my thoughts would probably be north of $1.2 trillion a year. And then we wonder why we have huge deficit spending and people can't pay the freight on things. I mean, where does it end? Do people actually say, look, this is what is actually killing us, this is stifling us? Because generally, other than when you guys speak about it and, you know, some other people, Alex Jones and some other people, maybe, the mainstream media are not even mentioning the true massive cost of this. And, you know, they don't mention that there's 17,000 people in that massive green zone complex in Iraq who are not ever leaving, probably. I mean, their mission is accomplished in the fact that 4 million barrels of crude oil leave Iraq unmolested every day. So I suppose that mission is a success. And then, of course, then we have the troops who are guarding the pretty flowers in Afghanistan and helping out with that. Now, if those guys were so perplexed, wouldn't they have got 5 gallons of diesel and burnt all the flowers down as soon as they saw them? Well, obviously, they're handling those flowers for the right consumer, and who knows who that is. And obviously, there's all these rumors of so many billion dollars worth of lithium there, or $1 trillion potentially of lithium there, and the need to secure these areas for corporations. And, you know, that is what it is. I mean, your thoughts with that?
Well, you know, the funny thing about that lithium, to be honest, I know that, well, I don't know any of this. We are just taking what documents we can uncover and then discussing them. But this is pretty well documented that our intelligence agencies were involved in trafficking drugs. And if you actually catch them doing it, like some poor bastard reporter and his associate did at the San Jose Mercury News some years and years and years ago during the Iran-Contra deal, where they tracked it all down. They actually found the receipts and all those sorts of things. And they were essentially savaged by the other media. They got fired for blowing the whistle, even though it was they were called liars, that the documents didn't mean what they said they meant, and they were just ruined. And that's the kind of thing that happens when you go up against the systems that are set in place for a reason. You just can't do it. And but the lithium thing, but so in other words, they're still, you know, they're using trafficking drugs in some way, shape, or form. And Adam has a theory that it's all the benefit. It's the only thing that keeps banking alive. And if you ever get to see a really good documentary, I would recommend Cocaine Cowboys. Excellent documentary about the cocaine smuggling that went on in South Florida and all the banks that benefited by money laundering. And, of course, we also know that that big Swiss bank was involved in that sort of thing. But I believe the lithium, which I think it caught everybody off guard, and the Chinese were, you know, trying to get that lithium. I don't know if they're going to be successful. We're pretty good at, if we see the Chinese doing something like this, we usually manage to circumvent their activities. But that lithium thing is a bonanza for somebody. It hasn't shaken out yet. I don't know who's going to take advantage of it, but that's a pile of lithium. Let's put it that way.
Maybe we could send Elon Musk over there. He'd probably like to get his paws on that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, I think he's busy enough.
Yeah, he probably is. Interesting topic the other day that you had on with Andrew with DH Unplugged. What do you think about that theory he had about the Fed's balance sheet and all those potentially maturing bonds? And that idea, I really thought that was very interesting.
I was actually taken aback by it. That was, I think, last year was the last show we did. We're doing another one tonight. I was taken aback by it because, first of all, it kind of didn't make sense that anyone would do this. And then it kind of made sense because it's a great way to kind of surreptitiously print money, look like you're doing something. It makes it look like you're not just plain printing money. But it, I don't know. Maybe you can explain what it. The theory is the following: that the Fed is buying all these Treasury bonds, and they're going to let them expire, without ever cashing them in, which is essentially the same as printing money, because it's giving them money. It's like turning it into a charity.
Well, it made a lot of sense. It made a lot of sense to me when he said it, and I was like, you know, is he letting a genie out of the bottle or something, or has he got some?
You know, nobody cares. That's the great thing about doing these podcasts. Apparently, in his industry, there has been this chat has been going around, and it's just taken for granted. And there's nobody in the mainstream that can write it up in such a way that it would kind of alarm the public. The public just pretty much at this point is very dumbed down. They don't care. They want to do, you know, shoot selfie pictures of themselves. They listen to whatever they listen to and read their Facebook posts and keep up with their old high school friends. And there's not much else. It's really been amazing turnaround to take although it may have been this way, I don't know. I mean, it may have been this way in the 1800s too. But just people generally don't care about this sort of thing.
I tell you, a huge number that hit me this morning, they had Steve Leisman on CNBC talking to, I forget the gentleman's name, but he was the president of the Fed of Massachusetts up in Boston. And he brought about, you know, this number of when the $85 billion a month giveaway will end. And, you know, he just casually mentioned to Leisman, who then brought up the Boston Red Sox, well, you know, the Fed's balance sheet is approaching $4 trillion. And then you think about the enormity of that. The Fed's balance sheet is approaching $4 trillion.
It's
unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. So something, a lot of it's from, it's not just, they're not just helping us. There is a lot, which I find peculiar, and I noticed this over the last 7 to 10 days. These Fed guys from every Fed area, you talk about that was a I guess that was Massachusetts. There's the guy from Texas. He was on some TV show. There's a guy from Kansas City, or maybe that's a woman. I don't remember. But they're all chiming in about one thing or another out of the blue. I've never heard of any of these people. And now they're all commenting on one thing or another. I find that very odd. And not sure why they're doing it. I'm not sure what they're up to, but they're up to something. There's no reason for these people to be in the public eye at all.
Yeah, I wonder what they do all the time and, you know, exactly what's going on with them. And, you know, what's going to happen with this changeover with Janet Yellen? And do you see anything with that, the way Summers was pushed out of the equation? And it really looked like the Obama administration was really pushing for Summers.
Obama likes to work with friends, people that he knows or people from Chicago that he has some connection to. Summers is an old buddy, so he wanted Summers. But Summers, everybody in the financial community knew that Summers was dead set against the continuation of the printing money. He wanted to pull back, taper fast. Yellen is all in with Bernanke, and so she would continue his policies, and that's what everybody wanted. So they found some. They essentially, Congress, people in Congress and elsewhere made a big fuss about Summers, and they didn't like what he did in the past either. He wasn't that talented by any means. We don't know that Yellen is any more talented, but we know Summers was not. And so they figure with Yellen it would be at least a continuation of this free money.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting for the markets. I mean, this guy was hinting today that, you know, does it really make a big difference if it ends in December or if it ends, you know, in January, February, March? Well, I'm sure retailers don't want it to end into December and have a Christmas stock market crash and, you know, so on and so forth. What's your thoughts on
thing,
that?
No, this thing, Horowitz and I on the DH Unplugged show, we point out, I mean, he analyzes the ups and downs in such a way that he's totally convinced that bad numbers coming in keep the market buoyed up because it assures a continuation of this free money, of the printing of the money, of the buying of the treasuries, of the 80, you know, 60 to 80 billion that gets pumped into the economy, which is apparently needed, or wouldn't be doing. I mean, I'm actually a subscriber to the idea because of, you know, my understanding of what happened in the 1850s. Essentially, we had the equivalent of $15 trillion of essentially printed money, which was in this case, it was gold being pulled out of the ground, which is the same thing to me as printing money. You walk down the street and you got a gold nugget, you just printed money, essentially. And there was the equivalency was $15 trillion. And which is the amount of money it kept a depression from occurring, which should have happened in this cycle from 1849 to about 1860. And it didn't happen because of this money, all of a sudden, all this free money. And that's, I think, Bernanke is a huge student of the economic cycle. And I'm always been convinced that he knows about this, and he was into the monetary easing for the purpose of throwing money in the economy, because otherwise we'd be in a out-and-out depression right now. I'm totally convinced of that. So these policies aren't necessary. They're arguable. That's kind of the problem, and there's a lot of arguing against them. It's like, we can't keep doing this. But if you remember around, it wasn't even that long ago, everybody going on, oh, we can't do this. We can't do this monetary easing, all the rest of it, because it's going to cause hyperinflation. Oh, we're all going to die. There hasn't been an indication of hyperinflation at all, considering all the money being printed, as it were. Where's the hyperinflation all these experts predicted? I don't see it. I don't see it coming. It's not going to happen during this 10-year period, that's for sure. If it wasn't for the free money, we'd be in the 30s, 1930s, 1970s.
Do you think that, though, is because the banks have kind of had a insular grip on a lot of this capital? It's not like they've been pumping it out to the people on the street. I mean, that they've effectively used it for their own purposes. You know, if you're a small business, it's not very easy to get a loan. I think they've stifled consumer credit. You don't see the, you know, look back at 2006, 2007. Anywhere you walked into any stores, they were looking at giving people home equity loans on houses, everything else. Obviously, credit to the man on the street isn't anywhere near what it was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Right, and you probably don't want it the way it was 5 or 6, 7 years ago. All you can say is that we don't have an economic collapse. Yes, you're right. The banks have essentially just put the money in their bank, you know, in their coffers, and collecting whatever interest they can get out of them. And they, you know, they do and still invest in large projects. I mean, there's still stuff being built, but it tends to be big stuff. But yeah, the average guy on the street, I think, I actually, to be honest about it, I think if they had just taken all the quantitative easing and just given it to the public, I think it actually may have worked out better. But quantitative or monetary easing, depending on what you want to call it, it was the bankers glommed onto it, and that's kind of the way things stand. But we still do not have a depression.
No, we don't. You're absolutely correct on that. And at this moment, John, I'm going to take this moment for a break. I've been rather badly behaved here. I think Mike has let me go over time. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more for John C. Dvorak and your questions.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please. Give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome to the People Speak radio show. We're back with John C. Dvorak. I'm Rob Kitzel. please put forward your questions for John. He's here to answer them. He's a big boy. He's not scared of any questions. So please come forward, and we'll have the first question coming in now. Are you handling that, Don, or is Mike doing it? I haven't got anything on this end. So I haven't got a question at the moment, so I will ask you another question, John. Do you think this situation with the government, we saw IBM's last quarter's earnings being off. Do you think this is actually affected by people feeling that the government have put a back door into, IBM's
products? Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
Cisco's products. Is that causing them, grief in the global marketplace?
I don't think it's – I think the grief is yet – the real grief is yet to come as people digest this. But it seems pretty obvious that there's a back door in Cisco products. I mean, there's always been a suspicion that Huawei's products coming out of China had a back door in them. And it's kind of an interesting operation itself. And it's easy to do if you run the routers. But I think the real fear, and I think it's going to, I think they're finally stepping up to the plate, these big companies, that they don't need the reputation. Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, none of these people need the reputation that whatever you do on their systems is going straight to the NSA to be perused. If I'm a government of Iceland and I'm writing a document up using Microsoft Word, do I have to worry that that document, as soon as I save it to my computer, is also going to go to Washington, D.C. to be analyzed and see what the Icelanders are up to in their parliament? I would just say, well, screw that. I'm going to use open source. And there's a lot of open source products that compete with a lot of these things. And it's like, why don't I just use open source? That's would hurt. I think the European and Asian companies, businesses really have to be skeptical about American products. And this is not sitting well with American companies who are losing business, it seems to me.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that's a good analysis of that. We have a question from Daniel from the UK, and he wants your thoughts on Vladimir Putin and his world influence at the moment.
We look at Putin quite a bit on the show, and he is kind of a self-promoter in a funny kind of way. We think he's targeted by our intelligence community to be embarrassed. Or there was a rumor that there was a couple of assassinations, at least one assassination attempt that got him ended up with him getting a concussion. At least there was some reports of that sort of thing. This is about a year ago. And he is also seems to be behind a lot of the there's stuff going on with Putin and the U.S. And I think like this gay thing, just to make Russia lose money on the Winter Olympics, I think is part of it. But we try to find out what we can. We're totally convinced there's definitely game playing going on between the Russians and the United States. And even though it's on a very back burner, not really being discussed much, but I think it's going on, and Putin is part of it.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. It might be interesting if the Olympics had some get out of Afghanistan banners up like that were done in 1980.
We brought this point up on the show a couple of times that celebrities and when they did the Academy Awards and all, we're seeing nothing. We're seeing, liberal Hollywood, they're not bitching about the drones. They're not complaining about the NSA. They're not doing anything. They're just it used to be in the olden days, even when it was a Democrat in office during the Lyndon Johnson era, for example, the public, the Democrat liberal student population was always complaining. And now they don't say anything. It's like, wow, what happened to you guys?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Well, we have another question now coming in from Bill in Maryland. And he's asking you, do you think there's something up with military officers being purged from the military? Because One of the theses is that they're not really yes men to the administration, and some very high level people in the military are being pushed out. Have you heard anything about that?
We've actually discussed this on the show more than a few times. Every time it happens with some guy who's apparently some hotshot, next thing you know, he's found in bed with a dead hooker. And this is, it's a purge of some sort. We haven't gotten to the bottom of it. I mean, it's obviously they need to get some of these guys who aren't yes men, who maybe have some thoughts on things going on. They got to get rid of them. Or they know something. There's also that possibility that there's a common knowledge amongst these guys that has resulted in them being kicked out. Or there's even maybe something more sinister. We don't know.
No,
but we're in on that thesis for sure.
Good. Yeah, there's been a number of people that we
just
speak to.
too many is the problem. If there was a guy here and a guy there, but this is a lot of guys that have been thrown to the curb, and then we don't hear anything about them after that. Nobody interviews them or anything.
Yeah, I agree. We have a good fan of yours, actually, a guy who comes in one of our chat rooms who's up in Cleveland, and he's asking the question. He wasn't here earlier. I think he was probably at work, about your 6-week FBI cycle. Maybe you can just broach that.
Well, if he's on the No Agenda mailing list, he'll get the newsletter, which explains where he came from. When we established this, this was, 6 months or longer ago, maybe a year ago. We saw a pattern to the these events, these specific style of events. They have earmarks. And one of Adam's, I believe one of his government guys that he chats with, said it was a cycle put in play to maintain funding for certain programs. And I believe that they've found that the American public, because you can't do this stuff constantly. You have to make it just at the point where you're about to forget about one thing, it happens again, and then you're just about to forget. So it has to be a long cycle, and 6 weeks looks like it's about it. Well, I mean, this should happen two more times in the next in the next 12 weeks, and we'll see if it just continues. But this last one was right on the money.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be more of an orchestrated push to put more of a control on guns in the country? And a few people that we've been speaking to have been suggesting that this foundry, the last remaining lead smelting facility in the United States, is now being shut down, and that will increase the pressure of lower ammo supplies, and maybe that's the different way around the gun issue, by people having as many guns as they want but not having any ammo to fire in them.
Well, you can buy more expensive bullets that don't use lead, so that's not really a complete. It sounds to me as though it'd be a benefit to some of the bullet producers that use other compounds, metal jackets or whatever. There's not necessarily a lead bullet. I think, in fact, it's illegal in California to use lead in a lot of stuff, including buckshot, because of the we have water all around, and everyone's concerned about the environmental dangers. I don't think that's true. I think this has been a bonanza for the gun guys. I don't know what they're going to do. You can get lead elsewhere. You can bring it in. It's just because we're going to lose our smelter. You're just going to raise the price on stuff. That's all the only real change that's going to happen. So, no, I'm not buying any of that.
Right. We have a question from one of our fans in here who he wants your opinion on 9/11 truth. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Adam Curry is the big 9/11 truther. I still have problems with the explanation for the destruction of World Trade Center 7, which has never been fully explained. So the fire caused it. It's never happened before in history. Happened just coincidentally right there. And we've seen videos of a guy yelling, pull it. I think
Mr. Silverstein, I believe.
Yeah, who owned the thing?
Yeah,
he owned all the buildings. There's a lot of it needs a little more analysis, and I think, it's great the way it was done in terms of like marginalizing any thoughts that there was anything behind it other than these guys, these Arabs in the planes, It was very well orchestrated. People always say, well, you can't keep, you know, not that many people can keep a secret. And I don't think there needs to be that many people that involved in something that if it was truly a conspiracy of some sort. And it, I think a lot of people can keep a secret. I mean, look at this NSA material that came out. I mean, a lot of people, how many people, they have tens of thousands of people working in the intelligence world, and they're all keeping secrets all the time. It's not that difficult. You know, Snowden comes out and blows the lid off this stuff, but there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that must have known about it, but they kept a secret. So, yeah, I'm not buying a lot of this. But I leave it to Adam to explore it more. I've got other things to analyze.
Yeah, you've got other things to keep you busy. Well, John, we would like to thank you for your courage for joining us tonight on the People Speak radio show. We know you're off now to do a DH Unplugged with Andrew Horowitz.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for your courage to put me on the show.
Well, we'd like to have you back sometime. I think the audience has enjoyed you, and I encourage people to listen to John. Go to Apple, or you know, you can go directly, but it's easy to go to Apple, go to iTunes, and go to the No Agenda podcast, which you can download free of charge. If you like what you hear, send John and Adam a donation, and you can also listen to DH Unplugged, also free of charge, on Apple iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, John, here on The People Speak.
And thanks for having me.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.